This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Hello and welcome to Back of the Nest, the Palace Years. This time it's season 17-18. I'm Chris Hambling and in just a moment I'll introduce you to my panel as we review the season.
Back of the Nest, the Palace Years.
Right, first up, it's a very special lineup today. It's a preview show takeover of some sort. Nearly said that right. First up, Terence Ford.
Hello, hello, hello. It's good to be back.
I'm so excited that you're on. You're my favourite.
Oh, Albert.
We've also got Albert. All right, Albert.
All right, that's nice. One for the confidence booster.
No, seriously, I'm so excited you're on, Albert. You're my favourite.
Ah, oh, thanks, mate.
Yeah, no problem.
Fuck you, Terence.
Right, first little beep for you there, Sam. Okay, this obviously carrying on from the previous show, we've just got to the end of a season where Sam Allardyce had saved Palace from relegation, you know, with the help of the players, obviously. But in true Palace style, we don't get to keep a manager. And I guess, gentlemen, maybe we weren't quite so disappointed that that Sam was going to go. It always felt like a short-term appointment, probably. And we replaced him with a really exciting manager in Frank de Boer. Amazing pedigree. What a player he was. And great success at Ajax. And, a little blip, of course, at Inter Milan. But everything was going to go perfectly well, wasn't it? He was going to introduce a lovely new way of playing. It was going to be this sort of fluid system. And eventually would become the Ajax of South London. So didn't quite pan out that way, though, did it, Terence?
No, it certainly didn't. I was so excited when he became our manager that I went straight to eBay and spent £70 on a Frank de Boer Barcelona shirt, which I wore to the opening game of the season. And then it's been in the drawer ever since. But he came in, said he was going to take it slow, sort of transition us towards his style of play. And just went straight out 3-4-3 and screwed us over.
Yeah, it was some really bizarre early decisions. Pre-season was interesting, to say the least, which we'll get into at the moment. But an initial reaction from you as well, Albert. Did you have any fears at all? Were you as excited as the rest of us about the name Frank de Boer?
Yeah, well, as Terence alludes to, it's a exciting name because of based on the pedigree of the player. But as a manager, you know, Ajax was a great success story for him, but very much in a, I'm not going to say an easy league, but in an environment that he knows and a team like Ajax should thrive in. Inter Milan, as you alluded to, that was all meant to be a blip because of unreasonable owners. I don't know if that's a warning from the past. But yeah, it all seemed a bit too good to be true. Something didn't feel too right about it, but you know, we'd had some unexpected bits of news over the previous, you know, things like signing Kabay, signing Benteke in previous seasons. It just felt, you know, it wasn't completely out of the blue, but I can't say I was overly excited about it because I didn't really know what to expect. But I certainly didn't expect it to only last as long as it did.
Well, didn't a search for him last longer? It was a good old time.
Yeah, it took weeks and weeks and weeks. That's why, we'll talk about the transfers in and out in this first section here. But it took quite a while before we actually signed any players. That's because we just didn't have a manager for ages. Pellegrini was rumoured as well, and it was kind of seemed to end up as a race between the two. Southampton then appointed Pellegrini, or did they appoint him after we appointed De Boer? I forget, but it promised a lot, and despite the long search, and you can kind of see why, as a chairman, that Steve Parish might have got kind of carried away with the personality of, I say personality, he was a bit of a monotone, boring man, wasn't he, in reality, but the kind of reputation that De Boer came with and the promise that he would turn us into this free-flowing, you know, Ajax of South London, as I've named it, and it just didn't happen.
He was going to be the man that finally exploited the catchment area. And just to point it out, is Pellegrino, not Pellegrini. He's the old Pardew called him.
He is, or the water. Isn't there a water called Pellegrini?
Was that the season we lost out on Marco Silva as well? Not that we were, I think Parish denied that, you know, we were ever really interested in him.
Yeah.
But is that the... Quite early on, he went to Watford. Boo here.
That's right. There was some thing. His agent didn't. His agent claim that we were in for him and took too long or something like that, and he went to Watford. But there we go.
Where is he?
Is he now? Exactly. What's he done since? Look. So as I said, the transfer business took a while. Actually, before I move on, I mentioned the fact that you can kind of understand why Steve Parish might get sort of taken in, as we all were, by the reputation and the promises made. There's nothing quite like nothing better in terms of visualizing that than the Palace Minute that was put out about it. So if you haven't seen it, go into YouTube, type in a Palace Minute and find the relevant episode. It's absolutely glorious.
3-4-3. Players interchanging. Joel Ward at striker.
Love those bumps. Does absolutely.
The thing is, De Boer is quite. You know, he's, say what you will about his managerial ability, he's still quite an intimidating man. So I do wonder if he just told Steve Parish that he was going to have the job, and Parish just had to like, oh, okay, because he is quite intimidating and a bit. He's a bit hard.
Yeah, and doesn't lack a bit of self belief either, does he?
Then he turned up in
chinos. Yeah, that's exactly what I was just going to say. Can you be hard wearing grey chinos?
Oh, I bet you can.
Moving swiftly on. So let's talk a little bit about the transfers in. So three permanent transfers in the summer transfer window. Jairo Riedewald, let's have a little chat about Jairo, joined us for £8 million. I know you were very excited by that, Terence, and I don't know if you still maintain that it's a cracking signing and he's going to eventually come good.
Would you know what it turns out the best thing about Jairo Riedewald was the whole saga of him becoming a player, where there was the leaked pictures on Twitter and it was someone taking a picture of someone, the camera that had taken the pictures of Jairo holding a shirt up. And then there was loads of discussions about whether it was real or fake. And it just really built up to being this, like, you know, it finally came through. Everyone was really excited. You know, we've signed this amazing ball playing centre back from Ajax, and he was going to spearhead Frank de Boer's football revolution in South London.
Hasn't quite panned out. Why do you think that is, Albert? Why is Jairo not settled and become the player we thought we'd signed?
Fat, innit?
There we go. That's covered that in all the detail we need to. Very excited to talk about the next signing. Dion Curtis-Henry from Peterborough United for free. Still at the club, of course, Dion Curtis-Henry. But frankly, no Chris Ketting, so I'm not going to...
I believe you pronounce it Henry.
Well, you can do.
You might.
Well, I'll let you carry on pronouncing it that. But just another keeper body in the club. So let's not get...
Is that a real person? Because I've never heard of him.
It's on the base.
I've got to say... Couple of the previous episodes of the, you know, these sort of retrospectives, there's been some names, and I'm sitting there scratching my head.
Yeah, I know. It's There's some, particularly when you go back to the initial promotion season, there's some fantastic signings in there that we'd all long forgotten about.
No, Albert, Henry was on the bench last season, you know, hoovering up those bonus checks, even though he doesn't play. But
you suck.
No, I'm just not doing it. I'm not joining in with that. Mama Sakho was, of course, signed on deadline day, I believe, or the day before, for 26 million quid after such a successful loan to Palace the season before. I think it's, you know, Steve Parish has mentioned that all the fans were absolutely clamouring for us to sign Sakho. And then the moment we signed him, he got kind of criticised for spending all our money on a centre-back. But for me, he's just been an incredible player for us. Disappointingly injured with a reasonable amount of regularity. But the partnership he's formed with James Tompkins, you know, again, are there many better players, Albert, you can think of in terms of centre-backs at Palace? He's been great, hasn't he?
Certainly our standout centre-half of the Premier League era, but, you know, by a country mile. Just, you know, and we like a character at Palace. It's probably why we're so popular. you know, and he... what are you laughing at?
Something else.
And he's really, you know, he's really thrown himself in. You know, he's all over the socials if you're into that sort of thing. And, you know, he doesn't seem like someone that just, you know, saw an opportunity to come back to the Premier League, make a load of money and just take it and go through the motions. You know, he does feel like a real part of the club.
T-Bone?
Yeah, and anyone who, while he's on loan, still is a Liverpool player and starts high-fiving our goal scorer as he did at Anfield. fantastic stuff. But no, he's an excellent player. He comes, I think he's underrated a lot by Palace fans because... of his passing sometimes goes astray, but you know, no one ever seems to mention the amount of times he passes the ball in between the lines of the opposition midfield and defence from the back. He really causes a lot of problems and really gets us moving forward, and he's just a warrior when it comes to defending, you know, putting his body on the line and all the time. And yeah, I can't love him. I think he's criminally underrated by pretty much everyone in the Premier League.
I definitely agree with that. There were so many times where he just seems to get that little touch in at the critical moment where you think that, you know, all hope is lost. Suddenly he manages to hook a foot around. He has those Sakho moments, but they usually come from the fact that he is pretty confident on the ball and has something of an unorthodox sort of style about him. But as you say, in terms of passing and just general football ability, you know, for me, we've never had a better centre back, and it is a privilege watching him play for Palace. It really is.
I still maintain that up until they signed Van Dijk, he was better than any centre half that Liverpool still had.
Oh, definitely, when we bought him, it was bizarre, absolutely bizarre. I mean, in a sort of different scale of things, it was a little bit like when Tompkins came to us from West Ham. They didn't really have anything better left at West Ham either. But yeah, you know, he obviously fell out with Klopp. Some issues over training and whatever, and we're the ones who benefited, fortunately. So we must touch on the ins in January. I'll go to the loans in a bit, because obviously there were some loans in the initial window as well. But I think we need to talk about the January signings under Hodgson. January was a terrible window for us, I think it's fair to say. We signed Diego Cavalieri, who obviously never played, but was a backup goalkeeper. We signed Alexander Sørloth, who at the time of recording remains a Palace player and has not really impressed anybody. And the fee rumoured seems to be ludicrously high for the ability of the player. Anyone want to jump in and talk about Sørloth in any different way than that?
He's scored an international goal since he's been with us.
There you go.
On FIFA.
one obviously recommended by a scout friend of Roy's, by all accounts, and
a blind scout friend of Roy's.
Hasn't panned out, though, has it? But we also signed Yaroslav Yak, and that was one of Dougie's mates. I can't remember his name now, it's gone out of my head, but and he talked about it as his off the radar signing, a player that was guaranteed to in the future be playing in the Premier League.
On FIFA.
not really panned out that. So delving into the loans, I'm going to kind of work backwards here because obviously we also signed Erdal Rakip. Remember him, Bert?
God, do I? Majestic.
I mean, what was that about?
Mainly off the ball rather than on the ball, but really off the ball.
That was the most ridiculous thing that ever happened. We signed a player on loan who hadn't played for his previous club, who then came and just did not play for us before going back to the club that he didn't play for and then signed for someone else.
I cannot get my head around it at all. Obviously, the idea was we were taking a look at him, but I mean, you could do that without signing him, can't you? I don't know, but it's very, very odd. And yeah, didn't exactly pull up any trees, but bizarre signing. And obviously, I think
he might have done, but we didn't see. He might have done. He might have been pulling trees up in a field somewhere.
But I think probably the worst thing about that was because of the lack of bodies coming in that window and various things falling through. Rakip and Yak were kind of paraded as our big signings. They got the full video treatment and interviews and all that kind of stuff. And it became even more bewildering for the fans when they never really troubled the first team at all. And I think ever since then, the club have been trying to sort of push them up the carpet, so to speak.
But obviously, the Yaroslav Yak did lead to one of the greatest Twitter moments in Crystal Palace history. After the CPFC Polish account had got really upset with someone tweeting something about the Poles in the Arthur Waite need to go, and he like just didn't realise that they were talking about the big stanchions or what they called
just supports stanchions. Beams,
so beams, yeah, and then the uprights, and then when the club announced him on Twitter, one of the tweets they did was a poll by a poll in the Arthur Waite. Very good.
Pillars.
Bring back Sam Jordan.
It's pillars, isn't it?
Pillars. That's the word I was looking for. Stanchion's a goal. It's the top corner of the goal.
Yeah.
It's what Chris Armstrong and Darren Pitcher hit.
Absolutely right. Anyway, also loans in back in the start of the summer. We brought in Timothy Fosu-Mensah, who, again, promised a lot. Dutch connection at the time, because De Boer was obviously the manager when we signed him. Man United had used him a little bit. Sort of came with a bit of pedigree, Terence, but it was a strange one. I don't really know. Was it that he just wasn't quite as good as his reputation, reputation that came with him, or what?
I don't know, he did have one fantastic game at Selhurst Park against Man City. But outside of that, he was very rapid. He seems to have all the attributes to be a very, very good modern-day fullback. But for whatever reason, it just didn't work. I don't know if it was a case of, you know, by the time Roy Hodgson came in, we were in such dire straits that it ended up being a bit more of a go for experience heads and people a bit more organised defensively to sort of get us back on the straight and narrow and before we could sort of push forward and become a little bit more expansive. And then, of course, a certain Aaron Wan-Bissaka hit the scene and that pretty much was the end for him.
Yeah, definitely. But I'd say definitely a disappointing signing overall, which was a surprise. Like you say, definitely had all the attributes. I've used the word definitely too much there. I'm going to gloss over it by asking Albert about Ruben Loftus-Cheek. By the time he finished with Palace, massive reputation, obviously went to the World Cup. For me, a little bit of a slow start before he came good, though.
I'm not gonna try and not that anybody's gonna go back and dig me out for it. I'm not gonna try and rewrite history. I was very, very scathing of Ruben Loftus-Cheek for his what you might call his sort of first half of his spell at us before he got injured and went back to Chelsea. Mainly based on the shenanigans at Bristol away in the cup, which we were all at, weren't we, briefly? I mean, we don't want to do a deep dive into that. It was awful. But I thought, I mean, listen, he wasn't the only player that night that really didn't cover themselves in any form of glory. And I felt that kind of carried on in the league a little bit. Not that we were in great form, but he kind of stood out as kind of just sort of, for want of a better term, just, you know, mincing around the middle of the pitch and not really getting stuck in or looking like he gave two hoots. However, the flip side of that is when he came back after his sort of injury at Chelsea and, you know, the last, what, did he play like the last 10, 11 games or something? you know, he was fantastic. And, you know, as bad as the first half was, the ending was way better. And like you say, it ended up
October 28th, Albert on Twitter said, Tuesday, Loftus-Cheek walks around Ashton Gate for 90 minutes. Saturday, walks back into the starting 11. Sounds like he was delighted with him, mate.
When I said no one was going to go back and re... I mean, I'm glad you have, because it's only backed up my point. Because like I say, I'm not going to sit here and try and rewrite history. Yeah, I thought he was terrible. I couldn't really,
March,
really couldn't see the fact.
March 12th, 2018, just after his injury. It worries me how hyped the wider Palace fan base is getting over the return of Loftus-Cheek.
Where are you getting this? In Cambridge Analytica in here.
I can't believe you've done that. That is brilliant. But yeah, like you say, Albert, it's not rewrite history. You know, you've admitted how you felt, and that by the end you were impressed, right?
So one more.
It's all
very pretty, and don't get me wrong, any extra available bodies in our current state is a plus. But the way he's being hyped, you think he was Ronaldinho.
Fair comment, completely reasonable, and
I can't find any comments after that. You seem to have dropped off a cliff where Ruben Loftus-Cheek is concerned.
Can I just ask you what your handle is on Twitter,
Terence? So what changed though, Terence? What do you think changed from Albert's obviously fair assessment of Ruben Loftus-Cheek?
It was a big change in position, really, wasn't it? Because we had no striker, and Townsend and Zaha moved further up the field. And he sort of played in that narrow, wide left position. And he just struck up such a great understanding with Patrick Van Aanholt and whoever it was, Townsend or Zaha, switching over to his side. It just gave him space. And every time he turned and got into between the defence and midfield, he looked like a Rolls-Royce strolling him forward. He was just majestic, and he had really good vision, passing strength, carrying the ball really well. And he just turned it on and sort of all came to a fore with that amazing Zaha goal against Leicester.
Yeah, definitely. And he weighed in with a few goals himself as well, and obviously has gone on to start to establish himself back at Chelsea. A lot of people were hoping that we would try and revisit that one, but I think that ship has sailed, at least for the time being.
Got into double figures for Chelsea in the 18-19 season, so not bad going at all.
Absolutely. So we'll just run quickly through the outs. I won't dwell on some of the more confusing names for Albert's sake, but we let Corey Andrews go. I obviously remember that one, Albert. Young striker. Didn't quite make the grade, unfortunately. But let Kwesi Appiah go, joined AFC Wimbledon. We let Jonathan Benteke go. We won't give him any more airtime than a considerable amount of airtime he got in the last show due to Mike's obsession with him. Fraser Campbell, we let go, and he ended up joining Hull. Luke Kroll, we let him go to Exeter City. Matthew Flemini, we released. Zeki Friars went to Barnsley. Gutted. Another one that you'll remember well, Albert, was Ryan King-Elliott. We let him go on a free, unfortunately.
No need to swear.
Joe Ledley was released after a really good spell at the club. It's incredibly important when we signed him, and for a few seasons afterwards in the McJedley trio. Did brilliantly there. Randall Williams, we've also given airtime to, so I won't talk about him too much. Alex Winter's brother, Ben Winter, was released and went to Bromley. Did pretty well to sell Steve Mandanda back to Marseille to make a profit. That was a pretty good deal.
Steve. Good time to touch on the Steve Mandanda there, talking about wasting money on Paris paraphernalia. After his debut at Selhurst Park the previous season, some guy who was in the victory managed to get his gloves off of him at full time. So he came into the pub with them, parading about, signed, you know, look, I've got his match-worn gloves. Me and my friend Nick made him an offer he couldn't refuse. And he was like, you know, finally got a number one to replace Julian Speroni. He's going to go down as a cult hero for Palace, an absolute legend, and this will be worth something in the future.
Have you considered...
Yeah. Hero was close.
Have you considered not immediately hero worshipping and just waiting it out? Because one thing, you are wasting money, and the second thing is you might directly be causing this. So you could perhaps hold off in the future and see how it goes.
Hang on. Weren't you the first person to get Wickham on the back of the Palace shirt?
He inherited my knees immediately, it would seem.
There is a definite connection here.
There we go.
I think you need to delve into your Twitter account and find out who else you've hero worshipped and has failed. Wow. So another one for you, Albert. We let Callum Sturgis go to Colchester United.
Oh, I mean, I remember it well.
Yeah,
I was hoping you would mention it, to be honest.
You had high hopes for him, but off he went to Colchester, unfortunately. Hiram Boateng went to Exeter. Clayton Petrunio, I can't pronounce it. Right, but you'll remember him, Terence, because he ended up getting released because he was taking up a place in the squad, wasn't he? Do you remember that?
Terence is livid. I was googling Callum Sturgis to see if I'd saw him play at Colchester last season, because I went to one of their games for a stag do. Turns out, no, he's at Needham Market now. No. But there you go.
Wow.
What, this time?
What player was you talking about?
Clayton Petrunio.
All right. Yes.
Isn't that a spell in Harry Potter?
Anyway, he did get released to free up a place in the squad for us to, to sign someone. I forget.
Yeah, wasn't he a keeper or something?
Yeah, he was. He was a keeper or something.
Obviously not. We let him go.
That is impressive. Oh dear. Right, I've got to move on as quick as we can. There are more that we released, but let's not talk about it. Let's talk about getting to the pre-season part of Frank de Boer's era. We've kind of touched on it already. So we played in the Asia Cup in this season, and you know, very, very memorable. There was, of course, a couple of games. So we played against Liverpool and we played against West Brom. Lost 2-0 to Liverpool, beat West Brom 2-0. And a certain Aaron Wan-Bissaka came on in both of those games.
Two games, one Asia Cup.
All right. I mean, you got nothing from Albert on that, and I gave you a sympathy giggle.
Never seen it.
We then followed our period of in the Asia Trophy, which we didn't win, with a friendly against Metz and a home friendly against Schalke.
Yeah, Metz was a good old day. Very sunny, lovely place. A Metz fan wearing a West Ham shirt threatened to stab me. That was fun. And I was with my wife, you know, just still threatening to stab me. And then we got pepper sprayed in the away end. Fantastic day out.
Wow. Had you done anything to deserve
it? Absolutely not. We couldn't even drink. Going into the stadium, they were serving. They had 2 liter bottles of Coke, of which they had 4 or 5, I think it was, for the entire away end, and they were charging €3 per little plastic cup where they just pour you some out. There was no water. It was 30 plus degrees outside, and they confiscated everyone's sunblock. It was. I was like, I do need it. And then I was like this is what it's going to be like if we make it into Europe. We're just, you know, maybe we're better off out of it.
Come on, mate.
Brexit means
no
Brexit.
No politics. Right.
I was talking about the Europa League.
Yeah. That's a lot to take in, though. The whole warm bottles of Coke poured into plastic cups kind of thing reminds me of a school fete or something. That's quite odd. But anyway, so we... Not too much pepper spray, even in Crawley, some school fates. Although we wouldn't have gone amiss at some of the ones I was at. So we went into the season, obviously, on a high after that wonderful pre-season. And we started the campaign against a promoted side who had done an incredible job to get promoted with the squad that they had. Obviously, it was Huddersfield Town, and they had strengthened to some degree. But realistically, they looked set for a season of struggle. At which point they spanked us 3-0. And Albert, you really wanted to talk about this game, didn't you?
No, I didn't. I've spoken about it too much in various points in history. It was just awful. I'm not one of these people that expects us to, opening game, newly promoted team, this is going to be easy. Like, it wasn't, if we'd have lost 3-2 or lost 1-0 in a tightly fought game, you think, oh, do you know what? Fair enough.
Yeah.
But we were dog shit and it was awful. And I mean, we know how it ends.
I wanted to give you the comments from Frank de Boer afterwards, and then we can talk a little bit more. Frank de Boer said this: if you analyse the game, it is quite simple. We started well, but after 10 minutes, the game changed. I think he's talking about conceding. We were close to making it 2-1, and if we did, I had a feeling we would get a point. You cannot go from suddenly 1 to 10. You have to do it step by step. We showed some good football, but a game does not last 75 minutes. You have to concentrate for 95 minutes. Huddersfield did a fantastic job, and compliments to them. They played how they always do, but if you lose 3-0, they deserve it.
What I love about that is they played how they always do, i.e. we knew what they were going to do. I knew what they were going to do. They were known in the Championship for just harassing and pressing and, you know, playing really high. Frank de Boer's gone on paper saying, yeah, we knew they were going to do that, but we didn't do anything about it.
No. Yeah, I've got, I could dig out proof because this definitely happened, but I, at the time I said it was the worst opening game for us possible to start against because it was a newly promoted team who were hungry, who pressed high up the pitch, and David Wagner had already said that he was going to continue to play in the style that got them promoted. So it was like, oh, we're going to have a back three playing for the first time together, with no ball playing goalkeeper behind them, trying to pass the ball around. And I think it's just going to end in disaster. And alas, it did.
And let's have a little talk about that starting lineup. Where the back three was Fosu, Mensah, Dan and Riedewald, wasn't it?
Was it?
With Joel Ward as right wing back and Patrick von Aanholt as left wing back. I'm saying it and it happened, but I'm not, you know, and Wayne Hennessy behind. It seems incredible now to think about it. And do you remember the halftime change he made? Do you remember who he took off at halftime?
Was it Luca?
It was Luca. You're absolutely right, Albert. His reproach to that appalling effort was to take Luka Milivojevic off at halftime, pop Andros Townsend on. No problem with putting Andros Townsend on, but, you know.
The warning signs were there, weren't they? Because he played Luka at centre-half. In the Asia Cup or one of the friendlies, and it's a hang on a minute, what's going on there?
Well, he started Joel Ward in that game, having not played him all pre-season as well, and there'd already been rumours circulating that he'd been telling Joel Ward how to play right back and demonstrating himself very heavily and like kicking him to the sidelines of the field and saying this is how you do it and playing the next 10 minutes of the training match.
Yep. And I think it was Ward and Kelly, at the very least, were players that were later made to train with the U team by De Boer as well to try and stamp his authority. Yeah, his idea was to try and break people by doing that. It was a very, very odd time. So obviously lost terribly in that game, but didn't really learn much from it. But I do have to say the following game we played Liverpool, lost 1-0. To a
Sadio Mane
goal. And I actually don't, again, Terence, you've got a pretty good memory of these games usually as well. I don't think we actually played too badly in that game. We kept ourselves in it. And we seemed to be more comfortable even then playing away from home than at Selhurst Park. So I think we did okay.
Yeah, it should have been probably 0-0. We could have even nicked it 1-0, but then it was just a bit of a defensive mistake at the end. The Christian Benteke missed a sitter from close range, getting it cut back and lifting it over the bar. And he was, I mean, Benteke also was extremely unlucky in the Huddersfield game with Lursell making a brilliant save from a point blank range header from him. And it kind of set the tone for his season really in front of goal or not in front of goal as it was.
Indeed. And the reaction to the previous game was De Boer actually took Riedewald completely out. Wasn't even on the bench and brought James Tompkins back in, but stuck with a back three and stuck with the same keeper as well. And again, Luka was taken off for Kaikai, 77 minutes in that game. It was despite the performance, it was still the kind of decisions that were being made. You're kind of wondering why they were, what, you know, particularly what his issue was with Luka. And I remember Luka had an interview, didn't he, on Palace TV, where he was asked what he thought about playing as a centre-back, and he wasn't too complimentary about it. And I do wonder if De Boer was aware of that and reacted accordingly.
I mean, you can see where it comes from, where De Boer was coming from. If he wanted to, if he wanted to play in that sense, he's got a guy who can play defensive midfield, can stroll out into midfield from the back three and sort of make up a five in the middle or however many numbers he wanted to be. So I can see weirdly where he was coming from with it, but you could just see that Luka was just not comfortable doing it in the slightest.
No, definitely not. And we followed up with a home game against Swansea. So we'd seen potentially some positive signs against Liverpool. But it just went backwards straight away. What to say about this? Tammy Abraham scored just before half time, and just after half time, a certain Dordan Ayew finished well, a reasonable move, pretty well. And we just didn't threaten. You know, it was three defeats, three games without scoring, and not really looking like scoring for the majority of most of the matches. And I think what was probably the most telling part of this game was, not only was it a pretty poor Swansea side under, was it Clement?
Oh, I can't remember. Yep.
Yeah. That, you know, they were sort of trying to find their feet as well. We gave them a really, really easy game. But I think probably the most distressing part of it all was that De Boer already rounded on the players straight away after the game. Said that they lacked guts, lacked balls, whatever it was. If a manager's starting to blame the players three games into a season when he's tried to introduce a new system and has been pretty inflexible about backing down from it to try and make the team more comfortable and put some points on the board, I mean, that's when the alarms really started going off. And I imagine that's when the alarms really started going off for the owners as well. Hmm. But yeah, certainly a disappointing one. And the final game of Frank de Boer's reign was Burnley. Lost 1-0. Created a whole host of opportunities, although only four shots on target out of 23, and there were 20 off. But the big difference, Terence, was that we went to a back four and played. It just looked very, very different.
Yeah, it did. I mean, it was an incredible game, really. And I have no idea how Frank de Boer said it after the game. I have no idea how we don't have a point. No, not a point, 3 points, because he was right. We dominated the game. And it all culminated in Scott Dan missing an absolute sitter just before the end of the game, and him missing probably done Steve Parrish a favour in that sense. He says he would have probably got rid of him anyway, but you know, a rousing last minute equaliser, first goal of the season, might have made it a little bit tougher for Parrish, but in the end he pulled the trigger.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Chung Yong Lee putting the final nail in Frank de Boer's coffin.
Oh yeah, glaring error, right? To give Chris Wood the opportunity to score in the third minute. But
and brought about the greatest attempted save in the history of goalkeeping, with Hennessy outside of his area trying to save it with a diving header.
Yeah, yep. Oh, dear. Lovely memories, eh?
Well, after that game, the rain was absolutely bucketing it down, and it was the most miserable thing ever. We was waiting for a taxi, and it was one of the lowest points of, well, absolutely the lowest point of that season, but one of the lowest points of since our return to the Premier League, really.
Well, it was an incredibly quick sacking. And did you expect it, Terence? Did you think that he would go that early on?
I didn't. Early on, I was saying, you know, we've made our bed to an extent. We've got to lie in it a bit. And I think there were signs in the Burnley game that, you know, he'd moved to four at the back, moved into our more traditional 4-3-3 sort of formation. And it definitely felt like we were, things were starting to actually unfold and some of his lessons might be kicking through. And it, in that game, if I remember rightly, Joel Ward was excellent. So it's all very well that Frank de Boer sent him down to the youth team to train, to try and get something out of him. But it probably works because he was excellent in that game. But then also behind the scenes, I don't know if the players already knew that he was going in that game, because it's one or the other. Either Frank de Boer was starting to get through to them, or Steve Parish had already sort of through the grapevine somehow let them know that he was going, and that's why they turned up.
It's an interesting point. I mean, I said at the time, and I still feel this way now, that it can't just have been results. For him to go that quickly, it must have been more to it. There must have been player reaction around the place. There must have been players who had gone to the higher ups and said, look, this is horrific, this is not working. And certainly more than one player complaining about it.
Yeah, well, he said when he sacked him, he said it wasn't the right fit, and I realised that very quickly, and I have to take responsibility for that, and that's why he sacked him quickly. And if anything, it took a lot of balls from Parrish to do that, because, you know, it made it, at the end of the day, it reflected really badly on him, because it took him so long to find the manager, and it seemed like going through a six-week sort of session to find the manager, he then got it so catastrophically wrong. Says, did you do the due diligence? Are you doing your job properly? And all of that down the line. So for him to actually put his hands up and say, you know what, this is my fault, hats off to him.
Yeah, definitely. And it was absolutely the right call to make, in my view, no matter what we saw in terms of the slight improvements in performance and the willingness to change to a back four. I never find myself wondering what if, I'll be honest. So it was the very next day, Albert, that we appointed Roy Hodgson. I don't know if Terence is going to dig out any of your tweets, but how did you feel about that?
I remember being, obviously it's not a name that makes you kind of jump for joy and think, you know, this is a real coup. But I remember being at work and all the sort of, you know, all the, what do you want to call it, glory hunting Chelsea top four sort of supporters are all like, oh, you know, you got Roy Hodgson, he's a main dinosaur. And I remember saying, well, you know, a club in our position, you look at what he did at Fulham and West Brom, you know, forget the Liverpool thing. I mean, that was terrible all round for everybody. You know, for a club of our size in that position, a very sensible, decent appointment. And yeah, okay, we might not rock out the league and finish in the top 10, but, you know, it's an experienced head, managed at many a level in many a country, many a continent. And you sort of thought, well, you know, it might take a little while, but he's going to come in and reorganise us. And, you know, and that's what he did. So I wasn't over enamoured by it, but I certainly didn't think it was a bad appointment. I thought it was very sensible.
Your tweet on the scenario was Roy Hodgson and JJ Abrahams. What a day for announcing appointments.
Oh, well, there you go. That was the day that we announced that JJ was coming back to Star Wars. There you go.
Yeah, JJ, your first name terms, obviously. So,
well, he's got two first.
JJ, Tom Cruise, and Albert walk into a bar is a common joke in the movie world.
It's not a joke, mate.
Not a joke. Happened. moving on. I know, Terence, have you got any thoughts on the appointment of Roy and whether it surprised you? Obviously, we will. Spoiler alert: it does turn around.
Yeah. Immediately whacked a load of money on us to stay up. It was the right appointment. It probably should have been the appointment in the summer. Although, arguably, if he would have been appointed in the summer, Steve Parish would have taken pelters for not being ambitious enough. But he came in, and he was obviously going to do a good job. He was obviously going to settle us down. It was Alan Pardew appointment when he came in, or the Allardyce appointment when he came in, or the Pulis appointment when he came in. It was just the staunch old English stalwart who knows the game, and he's just not going to get relegated under him.
Definitely. I can't honestly remember whether I said anything publicly or not, but I had reservations.
Terence will tell you if you
did. I'm sure he'll let me know in a bit. But I had reservations, at least privately, if not publicly, because sometimes it's hard not to listen to all the crap in the media. And obviously the whole England job situation and a lot of how he reacted in the press to being challenged, and he does get prickly if anyone in the press kind of challenges the decisions that he makes. Which is a fantastic video. But you know, look, that's him. That's who he is, and it's good to have that self belief. But he was ridiculed as England manager, and that sticks, unfortunately. And you do find yourself kind of believing that stuff, even though you know how these things work, and you know, particularly with England managers, it often comes from an agenda. And you know, the kind of blame culture that I find pretty abhorrent. But I was affected by that. But at the same time, you know, there was the local connection. He's a Croydon boy. You know, was at Palace as a youth player, and as we've talked about, an incredible career in football even up until that point. You know, he's still going strong at the time of recording. He is, you know, in terms of experience and knowledge of how to organise a team, as you said, Terence, exactly the right appointment. Particularly for the situation we're in. But didn't go swimmingly at first. His first game, we lost 1-0 to Southampton, and we kind of knew that was our biggest opportunity to get points out of his first three games. In fact, we would have said first four games. But, you know, 1-0 defeat to Southampton, then a thrashing 5-0 at Man City, and another thrashing 4-0 against Manchester United. And we'd gone seven games, no goals, no points, and it looked incredibly bleak for us. You know, the football world was very much looking down on Palace, and it was a tough time. But things turned around on the 14th of October when Palace were at Selhurst Park, played Chelsea. Early own goal from Aspilicueta, equaliser from Chelsea shortly afterwards from Bakayoko, before Zaha with a lovely left-footed finish.
Left-footed? What game are you watching, Palace? Left-footed?
He cut in. It was a right-footed finish. That's what I said. So Zaha went edit point. And no, look, warts and all, keep it in there. I don't care. You know, I'm using my memory here. I haven't watched the videos.
Well, we've started the point, and we haven't touched on it yet. But it was Huddersfield obviously kicked lumps out of him in the first game, and he was out up until this point. And sort of injuries became a theme of the season, really, as it went on. And you know, and it's another thing for on the field in that sense for De Boer. He certainly didn't have his absolute best player playing, so that can be harsh.
No, and I would have looked forward to Zaha starting as centre back. No, to be fair, you're making a very good point. Wilf was injured against Huddersfield, and you know, we know how important he was, and it wouldn't, you know, any manager struggles when we haven't got Zaha playing, particularly at full pelt. So that's a very good point, but like I say, I still don't think what if.
Well, it was only the first time in the 18-19 season when we managed to win without Zaha in the Premier League since we returned, or since he returned to the club. So it certainly was difficult for us to win without him.
Definitely. So, yeah, brilliant win against Chelsea. And that kind of put smiles on faces and gave a little bit of a sense of optimism. But, of course, it was still only one game, and it was still only 3 points, and we're still bottom of the league. But and then followed it up with a defeat against Newcastle. Very late goal. My memory is it even came off of his shoulder.
I think he sort of headed it into the back of someone, and then it or Kelly backheaded it or something into him. It wasn't. He certainly didn't mean it, and it just sort of looped up.
It's kind of one of those moments that, you know, this is just our luck. But again, a spirited performance against West Ham followed that with a 2-2 draw.
Considering it's us 3-3, I don't think we can gloss over the 4-1 defeat of Bristol City in the League Cup.
No, all right. Well, I've skipped the Cup. I'm just going through league games. But I was hoping not to bring that up. But yeah, okay. So we don't like travelling to Bristol City, do we, really? Was it two seasons before? Yeah. We'd had a nightmare as well. It was the season before.
And that was the infamous podcast. Yeah, quite quality listening there. Award winning.
But this. Was this the? I mean, this is going to be an in joke. Was this the tram incident?
No, this was the tram incident. This was Chris Hambling driving the wrong way down the tram tracks in East Croydon.
I did it for you and Tom Fancett, to get you your last possible train. That was all for
but
you.
But talking about getting prickly, Roy Hodgson really went off at the players at the end of this game. If you remember him saying, you know, even if you're the second 11 or the people on the fringes, you've got to prove to me that you want to get in this team. And no one's covered himself in glory that night. And it was just, it was an all-around shit show in that sense, because recently returned from injury, Pap Soare went in free shirt in the crowd and he got thrown back at him. And talk about the wrong player to pick on.
Yeah, absolutely right. It was terrible moment that. I can remember the aftermath, standing outside Ashton Gate and all sorts. Yeah, but you're right. We shouldn't have glossed over that. But that was a low moment. But it was good to see the kind of fire in his belly that Roy Hodgson had at that point, and he was absolutely right. And obviously that put pressure on those fringe players to try and, you know, get themselves back in his good books. So as I mentioned, we had a 2-2 draw against West Ham and a defeat to Tottenham, and another 2-2 against Everton. So, you know, obviously not putting wins on the board other than against Chelsea, but we were at least putting points on the board. And our next win came against Stoke City. Loftus-Cheek with his first goal for Palace, and a very, very late winner from Sacco as well. Memories of that one, Terence, you'll have memories.
Well, I mean, all four of those games really are sort of memories, because, you know, you've got the last minute equaliser for Zaha against West Ham, 97 minutes. First trip to Spurs playing at Wembley. Then you had the Omar Nias dive, which he later got a ban for in a 2-2 Everton game. But a Stoke City one, I was actually on honeymoon watching it on a really, really dodgy stream in the hotel in Mexico. And ended up Dos Equis beer all over the bed sheets when Sacco scored in the last minute.
That's not a euphemism.
the entire hotel heard me, that was for sure. And
Was that when Shaqiri went on? Shaqiri just walked past everybody.
Yeah, he channeled Messi for just a...
Yeah, he's hips didn't lie as he cut through our defence.
Yeah.
good work. Well done. Solid. Three draws followed that, including a 0-0 against a certain South Coast shit. That's all I could think of saying. Sorry, Sam. 0-0 against West Brom as well before another 2-2. We definitely liked a Desmond's, didn't we, in this particular season? And that was against Bournemouth, where Jermaine Defoe scoring against us again.
And, of course, the infamous in that game, the Chris Benteke penalty.
Of course it was, yeah.
Was that the Defoe goal where he scored from an he lobbed? From an impossible angle.
Brutal, absolutely brutal. But you're right, Benteke really turned the players and fans against him with that one, didn't he? Insisting on taking a penalty. Given how good Luka is at penalties, it just seems nonsensical now. But we know that there was redemption later on, wasn't there? But it took a while. But two wins in a row after that, beating Watford 2-1. That was a good game, wasn't it? I remember that one. Two beautiful late goals, and we went crazy with the Sacco goal to get the equaliser. But when MacArthur won it, that's the first time I can really remember the players running off into two separate groups because they were going so mad, and just everyone in the crowd. I mean, that's limbs. That was the very definition of
that
limbs.
Run from Zaha to set MacArthur up. It was just used over and over again, isn't it, in GIFs and all that sorts of things. Whenever he's talked about, that's sort of the quintessential Zaha assist.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the dancing feet. They didn't know what to do. And it was great that it was against Watford as well, because obviously they hate Zaha for stuff. They're obsessed with calling him a diver. And I work with a... Let's put it the right way. A Watford fan works for me, and I have to put it like that. And he's exactly the same. Hates Zaha, and I was like, well, when did he dive against you? And he's going, well, you know, started in the playoffs, didn't it? And I've I've got the video out of that foul so many times, and just put my phone on his desk and walked off just so he can watch it again.
Well, he peeled off, didn't he?
At what point do you go back and get your phone?
Sorry, say that again.
At what point do you then go back and get your phone?
Just later. We followed it up with a customary thrashing of Leicester City. I remember travelling to that one. And that was a beautiful moment as well. Three very, very good goals, but Sacco's was perhaps the most satisfying in injury time. The way he just slapped that ball into the net. Absolutely beautiful strike. And loved his celebration towards the fans.
Rarely spotted Christian Benteke goal in that game as well.
Exactly, yeah. Was a header, wasn't it, from a cross. You remember those? Crossing the ball to old Christian Benteke and him heading it in. Didn't he head it down and it bounced into the roof of the net? It was the sort of thing where...
It certainly came off his shoulder, that's for sure.
Yeah. But, it's still a goal, wasn't it? It still counts. We won't dwell on all of these results, of course, but a draw against Swansea after that. And we put a pretty decent run together there. That's... I'm counting them now. I don't know if you can tell. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games unbeaten after the draw against Swansea, which really had turned our form around going into the Christmas period. So the draw against Swansea was our last game pre-Christmas. A disappointing and slightly unfortunate in a lot of ways defeat at Sellers Park to Arsenal, 3-2. I think the most frustrating thing for that was Sanchez's goals. Now, am I right in saying one of them was a header?
I can't really remember. I remember one being really good near post finish with a short back lift. Excellent finish. But it was the only, even more frustrating about that game was it was Sanchez had been a non-entity all season, and it's three days before the transfer window opens and he come to life.
Yeah, exactly.
And Jack Wilshere as well, like it was like the second coming of Christ. Jack Wilshere ran the show after not being able to walk for about five years.
Glorious. But one of the, weirdly, for a 0-0, one of the most memorable games of the season was Palace-Man City. Obviously, Man City dispatching all comers, come to Sellers Park. We'd already lost 5-0 to them earlier in the season. And it was a rare start for... Jairo Riederveld played central defensive midfield that day. Just an excellent performance to get the point. And again, there's not a huge amount of memorable moments for me from that one. But
it helped that he took up most of the midfield.
I mean, look, I can't talk about the weight of Jairo Riederveld, but he just likes a baggy shirt. What's your problem?
But yeah, it was also the that was the Fosu Mensah game I was referring to earlier where he... he just gave Sane a really, really good game and kept him out of it, who was in great form. And then, of course, it all went a little bit mental in the last few minutes.
Yeah, what were you saying about Luka being really good from the penalty spot?
That's obviously a what-if moment. In the grand scheme of things, it doesn't feel like it matters now. But at the time, it just would have been the icing on a very, very nice cake.
And of course, it was the day, rest in peace, Kevin De Bruyne, that he died at Sellers Park.
The ridiculous reaction to that. And obviously, Punchin was the one who was actually hurt. It's a bad challenge, but... a terrible.
Yeah, but that was Scott Dan and punching out for a year after that, both of them in that game.
Yeah, definitely. You're right. It cost us, and like you say, injuries were definitely a factor.
Well, Riederveld is in the team.
followed out with a couple of wins, 2-1 away at Southampton and a 1-0 win through a Bakary Sakho goal against Burnley at Selhurst Park. Any memories of those before I move us swiftly
limbs on? At the Southampton game when Luka Milivojevic put that one away, that lovely curling shot into the bottom corner.
Yeah, I was there for that one as well. That was nice. And I remember it was one of the games that was incredibly frustrating after Long scored. I mean, I don't like him anyway, but I just felt like it wasn't going to happen for us that day. And obviously we come off the back of such a positive result against Man City, but like you say, missing a penalty and a kind of what if, and we really need the points. But very, very satisfying. And yeah, Luca's long range goal there was beautiful. And again, it's always nice. Say again?
Goal of the season? Was it goal of the season? Officially, I'm not in your opinion. I think that one.
Because it was a goal of the season. I think you're
goal
right,
of the season one more time. I think it won goal of the season.
Goal of the season. I don't know if anyone's mentioned that. But yeah, we were struggling with injuries at this point, so we had a bit of a dodgy run. Lost 4-1 to Arsenal. That was quite hard to take that one.
That was awful.
It was 22 minutes. They scored 4 goals in 22 minutes, and it really was one of a moment of wondering what on earth is this score going to be at that point. After half time, obviously tightened things up a little bit, and
not that I'm one to use illegal streams.
No,
but I remember that being a game where trying to find a stream that worked. By the time I'd found one. 3-0 down. Just turned it off straight away.
Yeah, we were off that day. I actually watched, it got to 4-0, and then I went back into the concourse and stood there and drank beer for the entire game. After that, I didn't see any more of the game other than what was on the screen when I occasionally looked up at it to see what was happening.
But yeah, like I say, that hurt. And despite a couple of 1-1s, one against West Ham, one against Newcastle, we then lost 4 in a row, we had obviously a 3-1 against Everton where, Nias scored, constantly linked with us. So, of course, he scores. And obviously with the dive earlier on in the season, already mentioned, kind of made it worse. A very good performance against Spurs, but yet again, 1-0 defeat. Harry Kane's late header. It was from a corner, wasn't it? And I think a certain goalkeeper was not really anywhere to be seen.
Soft fingertips over the top of him. I actually remember defending him at the time a little bit for it. And looking back, I still do see what I was getting at. That it looked way worse than it actually was as an error. It wasn't as much as an error as it looked like, because just everything just sort of went against him in the moment. And it was a very windy day and caused him some problems. But
it didn't do anything for his Kit Kat fingers / Chris Packett hands reputation, does it?
No, it certainly didn't.
And then an absolutely devastating defeat to Manchester United, because we were 2-0 up, playing really, really well. And then Smalling sort of gets a... the Smalling goal was at the wrong time for us. If we'd held on maybe 5-10 more minutes, I don't think we got a problem in that game. But he got one back in the 55th minute. Lukaku equalised. Then, of course, Matic. He scores loads of goals, doesn't he, Matic? Yeah, always knocking the goals in. Suddenly blasts one in from long range in the 91st minute. And
it would be a miss not to mention, of course, though, that this was Aaron Wan-Bissaka's debut for the club.
Absolutely right. Performed superbly in that game and ever since, really.
Sanchez didn't get a look in, because he's there by that point for the listeners. He's moved from Arsenal to Man United.
good point. Just a good point. I'll shut up. He wasn't his debut, though. It was his home debut, because he played against Spurs, didn't he?
Oh, did he? Spurs was...
His debut was against Spurs.
That was at home as well, wasn't it? I don't know.
Yes, that was at home. You're quite right. Okay, well, I tried to get you out of it, and I've made it worse.
I thought it was against United. It's easy to misremember even this close, really. You know, what, we're only a year and a half down the line, or a couple of years.
At the time of recording. and obviously he had a real baptism of fire, because it was Spurs, Man United, and then Chelsea were his first few games, and the Chelsea was a defeat as well. Got a late Van Aanholt goal, but too little too late after an early Willian strike. And then there was a Kelly own goal. I don't really remember that one. Does anyone remember that one?
Martin Kelly probably does.
Probably still keeps him awake, doesn't it? But there you go. So obviously a tough run of games and a tough run of results, but we picked up a very important 2-0 win against Huddersfield. After that game, it was an early Tompkins goal and a Luka Milivojevic penalty that saw us get the points there. And that was kind of the point where things really started to pick up for us. We did lose 2-1 to Liverpool after that, before we went on a good run. Now, I think, was it Karius in that game? Did some horrific tackle on someone. It will come back to me.
Mane definitely should have gone off that game. I remember that.
Just remember it being very, you know, it was, we lost it, but we shouldn't have done. So much went Liverpool's way in that game. It was untrue. Yeah. And they were really dirty in that particular match. But
my son's first Palace game, that one.
See,
that's why he hates Liverpool.
Good. Yeah. And that's the way.
He'd already been to 22 Watford games by that point, though.
But as I say, that was kind of a turning point for us. Didn't lose for the rest of the season in the so it's the remaining six games. So draw against Bournemouth. At which point were we safe in this? You've got memories.
I don't. It was technically the Leicester game. I think would have put a save. It might have been Stoke. But it was. Yeah, I mean. It was all from the point we bit. Huddersfield was the real key one, really. When we won that game, it was that was a big six pointer in the snow, and you know, it's funny that I always think, I was looking back at that game earlier, and if Andros Townsend won a penalty in that game, and if Wilfried Zaha had won that penalty, everyone would have been laying into him, because it's one where, you know, he drags his feet and seeks the contact out from the goalie. Yeah. No one says anything about it because it's Andros Townsend.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, I remember that pretty well. Definitely looking for it, but contact was there. That's what I'm going to say in his defence and defence of any Palace players. So draw against Bournemouth, and then really enjoyable 3-2 victory over Brighton. All the goals in the first half, early goal from Zaha in the 5th minute, followed up by a sort of scrambled effort by Tompkins going over the line in the 14th minute. We were in sort of, let's call it Dreamville, I'm going to call it. We were very, very happy at that point. Then Murray gets his head on an effort from a corner to flick it into the net. Typical Glenn Murray. And just when you're thinking, you know, this might go against us, Zaha pops up again, 24th minute, to smash one home. 3-1, and you're kind of thinking, game over. Some wobbly moments, it's fair to say, particularly after Izquierdo scored what was a very good goal, unfortunately. But held out well for the win, and very much enjoyed that.
Yeah, Glenn Murray missing an absolute sitter right late on.
Oh, God, yeah. But it looked like he was playing for us in the second half. He just kept clearing it, didn't he? Well, the one in particular where his foot was at completely the wrong angle to score. Yeah. I really enjoyed that. Good recollection. So there we go, draw against Watford for another well-fought point there. At Vicarage Road, were you? Was your son at that one? No. Right, just checking. And then again, another thrashing of Leicester City, and I really enjoyed this one. Got a lot of my family tickets for this one in the Arthur Waite, and they kind of wonder what all the fuss was about all season, because it was their first game. And I think Harry Maguire had a turning circle of a barge in that match. And we just absolutely took them apart. And that was where we really saw the brilliant link-up play. Zaha, Van Aanholt and Loftus-Cheek down the left-hand side in particular. Just absolutely tore them around. And of course, redemption for Christian Benteke in the 90th minute. And I thought that was a really nice moment, because that's the sort of thing that restores your faith in our support. And generally speaking, at games, we're not too bad at support. It's Twitter where our support seems to be quite evil. I'm generalising. You're all very nice, but yeah, I love that moment. It was, you know, it's not quite tears to the eyes kind of moment, but it was nice that he got a rousing reception after scoring it as well.
And callback, looping it back to earlier, a beautiful through ball from Mamasako in that game.
Oh yeah, yes, yeah,
for goal number 4. Don't know, don't care.
Yeah, for a goal. It was Van Aanholt, wasn't it? I think you're right. I think that was goal 4. But anyway, great, great thrashing. Very much enjoyed that. We relegated Stoke, didn't we? That was nice.
The Patrick Van Aanholt curse.
That's it, yeah. He scored, didn't he? He scored a hell of a lot of goals towards the end of this. Well, I say a hell of a lot of goals. Some goals, three goals towards the end.
He had that record where he sort of, he was kept relegating teams, and sort of, you know, because he relegated Stoke, then relegated West Brom, then relegated Huddersfield, scoring in all.
Spoiler alert! That's next. That's next. Next time.
Next time on Back of the Nest.
End of the season. Last game of the season was a 2-0 win over West Brom. Zaha and the aforementioned Patrick van Aanholt, and a lovely end to the season. And it was kind of a what was all the fuss about moment. Incredible to think that you could start a season with, you know, no goals and no points after seven games. Yet we finished it. I'm not scrolling to the table. We finished it in 11th place with 44 points, equal on 10th, in 10th for Newcastle, just behind on goal difference. And, you know, absolutely glorious end to the season, full of optimism. So that's it. That's the end of the season review. Just we mentioned the cup where we lost to Bristol City in the League Cup. An unfortunate and slightly boring defeat to Brighton in the FA Cup, which obviously doesn't matter and we don't talk about it.
Where Bakary Sakho smacked it, as Wilfried Zaha said on Instagram. Slapped it.
Yeah. Slapped it, yeah. And a late Glenn Murray goal, which was shades of handball about it, if we're honest.
First VAR use in England.
Yeah, not according to VAR.
Yeah. They let him get away with it. But, so that's it. We ended 2017-18 in 11th place, Roy Hodgson as manager, and we were hopeful that we might actually get to go into the following season with the manager still in place. I wonder if we did. So that'll be next time on Back of the Nest, the Palace Years, where we look at season 2018-19. So my thanks to Sam for producing, to Terence and Albert for joining me, to you for listening. Obviously, get in touch with us, hi@backofthenest.com. If you want to get in touch by email, and check us on all our social medias. And of course, subscribe to the podcast on your chosen podcast app, where you can rate us 5 stars and only 5 stars. I think that's a good way to end.
Or we could end on congratulations to Roy Hodgson being given the key to Croydon at the end of the 17-18 season.
Oh, well, he was, wasn't he? Wasn't he? If they...
It's a shame we can't remember where he put them.
After our home record last year, maybe sort of take that back. Just give him a little incentive for next season at the time of recording. Oh, dear. Well, that's kind of petered out now, isn't it? You can you can sort that out in the edit, Sam, couldn't you? So we don't end on this sort of low energy sort of bit. Goodbye.
Back of the Nest, the Palace Years.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.